Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you, everybody. And hello, my name is Mike Berry. I'm with ONC. And I would like to welcome everyone back to the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. We really appreciate you joining us today. I'm going to open up our meeting with roll call, and I will start with our co-chairs, Arian Malik.
Good morning, my time.
David McCauley.
Hello.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Cynthia Fisher. Valerie Gray. Jim Gerges. Edward June.
Good morning.
Karen Kamoto. Victor Lee. Les Leonard. Jack Poe. Raj Watwani. Ram Sharam.
Present.
Sasha Termott.
Good afternoon.
And Andy Truscott. Great. Thank you so much. And I'll turn it over to our co-chairs, Arian and David. Take it away.
All right. Yeah, I think we have a little bit of a reduced attendance or slow attendance. I see some folks joining the call. We had a marathon session yesterday of public health testimony, followed by the ISP task force update. So today we're going to basically redo what we did yesterday, but at a much more abbreviated session, and then really get into homework and next steps, which is primarily around looking at the draft high-level recommendations in the transmittal letter format and putting together a work plan between now and the next HISAC meeting to get to finalized recommendations. I think we're in relatively good shape. That is, I think we could take the recommendations as they are right now and publish them as recommendations in a transmittal letter with a little bit of spit and polish on them. But it might be nice to go to the next level of more detailed recommendations and take the high-level recommendations and kind of dial them up a notch. So we'll go through a process of assigning some homework, orienting people to the material in the transmittal letter, and put together a plan between here and the end of the task force, or the end of this incarnation of the task force. So if we get to the next slide, Clem, you have your hand up. Clem, is your hand up just to say that you're here and you missed roll call, or do you have a question?
You're muted, Clem.
All right, we'll keep going, and if Clem wants to chime in, Clem, feel free. All right. Go to the next slide. And so, again, just to remind everybody, we are lined up for next month to submit our recommendations letter and transmittal letter format. If we go to the next slide.
Arian, just to clarify, that next meeting, the June meeting, yeah, you got it right here.
That's the final.
That's we're done.
We're know. Done, exactly. So we have today, the 20th, 27th, and the 3rd, prior to the meeting on the 9th, where we will be delivering the transmittal. And as I said, I think we're in relatively good shape here. I think we could just take the recommendations as they are, and deliver them with more recommendation type language. But I'm sure that we're going to want to both put a little more color around the recommendations and get some detail in some cases around recommendations. So,
and just, Arian, to add color to that, in case the members aren't familiar with the process, which I'd forgotten about, our deliverable is the transmittal letter, but also a set of slides that have a particular format that's different than the format that we're currently under. So I think our plan is to craft a transmittal letter and then use that to build the slide deck that they request, the format of the slide deck. Is that right? So,
Historically, we've done it a couple of different ways. Making the slides a summary of the transmittal letter, or trying to get the slides as close as possible to the transmittal letter. And I found in the past that people get confused, or they go to the slides rather than the actual recommendations. And in many cases, we work really hard to make the recommendations worded just so. So my bias is to make the slides, you know, just pour the recommendations letter back into the slides, which leads to fairly wordy slides, but at least it solves for the lofty conversion from slides to transmittal letter.
Say, Arian, I didn't have voice when you were asking, and what I'd like to do is to discuss some of the recommendations, some of that were unclear to me, and then but that's, I don't know if this is the right time. So whenever
we'll go through the recommendations and definitely value your input in cleaning them, any additional tuning or cleaning that's required. All right. So we're gonna make the transmittal letter basically the main thing that we work on and work off of. So this will be the last time that the slides themselves are the main content that we work off of for the meeting on the 20th, 27th, and 3rd. We're going to be primarily working off the transmittal and make sure that represents the sense of the work group. And then on the 3rd, we'll sort of work on the transmittal back into a slide presentation for the high-tech meeting on the 9th. All right. If we go on to the next slide, I think everyone knows this. And on the next slide, so here's our recommendations. And again, I think most folks have been through this a few times. We sent out the recommendations to the full task force, got some folks providing input. Some of the input came in, I think Ricky's came in a little too late for us to make the updates. So, you know, we just published draft recommendations to the committee. I think we got generally favorable response to those recommendations. No major angsty bits, with, you know, maybe a couple of needs to make sure that we've got appropriate clarification around the recommendations and the intent of the recommendations. We'll go through this and then review the recommendations letter format at the end of going through the recommendations. So if we go to the next slide. So Ricky, I think this is where you had some comment, but we covered I think David did a nice job of this yesterday, but what we tried to do in light of the upfront conversations we had on the ISP task force meeting is to pull out recommendations that were more general or foundational, things that ONC could make progress on that would serve as substrate for a bunch of different use cases before we got into the more subject-specific areas. So, for example, and I think Clem, you had a comment on this yesterday, we pulled out all of the terminology-related sections that we heard about in gravity, real-world evidence, and in the clinical administrative burden reduction areas, and turned them into a set of vocabulary recommendations. We pulled out the foundational standards, the FHIR foundational standards, that were the substrate for gravity, substrate for EPA, and substrate for clinical research, and pulled them into this section. And then we also have a section on remind me, David, what our third section is that's foundational vocabulary. This one, we'll figure it out when we get modeling. There's the research modeling. There's the implied model of administrative transactions, and then there's USCDI. So we pulled that really important work out to make sure that we had a process for ensuring that USCDI mapped out to didn't arbitrarily create lossy conversion. And Clem, to your point yesterday, you know, in the research section, we're certainly not suggesting that research needs or administrative needs be the thing that we drive clinical documentation around, although these days we mostly drive clinical documentation around administrative needs. Rather, what we're suggesting is the interoperability needs that we, or the interoperability set that we have in USCDI should at least not create arbitrary difference to research use or to administrative use, so that we can maximize the reuse of clinical documentation for other purposes. So with that as preamble, this first section addresses the foundational FHIR specifications that aren't already part of certification requirements and that we believe are foundational and substrate for gravity, research needs, and administrative transactions, in particular the EPA work that the Da Vinci Group has done. And then Ricky had a comment on triggering offline workflows via FHIR subscription, that can be a more, you know, a broader set of cases. I think Ricky had some suggested language that I think we're more than happy to drop into the language. Clem, I see you got your hand up.
Yeah, there's a couple parts. Firstly, you know, I love CDS hooks, and I think the idea of subscription is without pain. I think that should be highlighted. And I love questionnaire. I've been working on it for the last 2 years. So, but what I worry about is, you know, I'm a clinician at heart. I haven't seen patients for about 10 years. But, you know, if you've got to do what the computer says. So if all of a sudden the computer is asking you what you might consider for this patient dumb questions, you got to fill in these fields by questionnaires popping up. I think it could be very destructive to primary care. So I don't wonder if we get some phrasing in there that might suggest this isn't meant to assault a physician and asking for everything anybody ever wanted, whether it's relevant to that patient or not, you know.
Thank you. And again, that's part of the preamble text, which is CDS hooks, FHIR subscriptions, FHIR questionnaires should be configurable. So they should request from the clinician only what the clinician or the health system is suggesting to request. In the real world, you may have a health system that is requesting information in a context that is maybe disruptive to an individual clinician, but that is ultimately a clinical workflow question that is a last mile configuration question, not something where ONC or CDC should be plugging work in. That being said, I think the experience of I think the experience of ECR, for example, and ECR Now, or the experience of the Zika flavor of ECR Now means that there are cases where there'll be interruption, where health systems in conjunction with public health, for example, will configure their systems with interruption for clinical workflows. Sorry, Clem, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, who gets to decide what a clinician spends his time on? And I can imagine, I mean, public health, we worked with them intensely at Indiana, and so we were able to increase by 80 or 90%. I mean, we tripled the amount of reports we gave them for gonorrhea and a bunch of diseases. But that came from public health, you know, directly from the labs, not bothering the physician. And plus, they already knew that it was that level. So I don't. But anyway, so the main point is that one should have some clauses in here that there would be cautious about physician consent or the clinical community's consent
yep.
to these things. The nice thing about subscription is that that implies that they want it, and that's perfect.
Yeah, no, great points, and we'll make sure in our preamble that CDS hooks and FHIR subscription are used by clinicians and systems to configure EHRs with chosen workflows.
Yeah, and of course,
I think
hooks will be very helpful for research too.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, one other consideration is that, and maybe there's an overarching sort of workflow notion that we should word into our assumptions, that this data, these alerts and interruptions should be configurable as to who they interrupt. It isn't always going to be the clinician in the middle of a primary care encounter. Some of this stuff can be routed and administered by other folks, depending on the workflow
sure.
in the system.
Yep.
Number one. And then number two is many of these things will be required one way or the other. And the question is it more disruptive to have it in the context of the patient's chart open and while you're thinking about the patient, or to have it bombard you some other time or force you to go to some other source, like logging into the web and going to some website and filling out some prior authorization information, et cetera. So the net savings in time is probably going to be real if we do this well, if systems do this well, but it's not all it shouldn't all be configured to the moment of care. The moment
of
caregiving.
The problem is there's enthusiasts on some sides of this who and
sure.
you know, in terms of public health reporting, you know, the big deal stuff physicians are pretty good at, but these things that are, you know, gonorrhea is all over the place, chlamydia infection. I mean, these are not sort of anything new, and they don't do
yeah.
report very much of it.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Well, you know, these are tools. They have to be used appropriately and made configurable. I think that those are important things to stress. Workflow, configurability,
and usability.
Appropriate respect for clinician. Yeah. Appropriate respect for clinician time.
Yeah. You get that in there.
No, those
yeah.
are all good. Yeah, those are all good
but
points.
Who,
none of them are the purview of an interoperability standard, but we can mention them anyway.
Yep.
But these general tools, I think, are very supportive of.
Cool.
Good.
So thanks, Clem. Other comments from the work group or task force? I keep forgetting that we switched from work group to task force arbitrarily to make it clear the task force were task driven.
Just a general question, and maybe Sasha, if you're still on and listening, directed to you and to Ricky. FHIR questionnaires, in the early design of those, I thought it was pretty lousy design, but they seem to have been adopted pretty well. Is everybody comfortable that that's a route that we should endorse? Clem, you've been working with them, you said? Any reservations about the FHIR questionnaire design?
Well, the FHIR, you know, it'll be different depending on who implements and how you implement it. But you could, you know, we have questionnaires. We've got some Medicare questions with 700 questions. I hope they don't throw that at a physician during practice.
Yeah, I meant the actual architecture. So when I looked at it, and this I admit is quite out of date, but when I last looked at it, it had this unholy mix of semantics and user experience all mangled together in a way that struck me as not a great design, but maybe it's gotten cleaned up or maybe
I was wrong.
I
may be too close to it. I remembered your harsh criticism of it when we first talked, and the idea that it's not going to do voice and everything else necessarily together. A lot of that's going to be depending on the system it's embedded in, I think.
This is Sasha. I'm not familiar with it personally. I'll ping some colleagues and send an email with follow-up if we have concerns. But appreciate the call-out, David.
Yeah. I mean, I talked with Graham about it, and he was comfortable. He admitted that there were some flaws, but he was comfortable that it was a useful step. And I think that seems to be the consensus. But I just want to make sure we don't endorse something about which there's a bubbling, criticism that we are not aware of. So just make sure we're clear on this one.
There's at least five or six implementations, and we've done one, MLM in JavaScript.
Yep.
And again, I think we're recommending that these are high priority areas. I don't think we're recommending endorsement of the standard implementation guide as it currently exists. We're recommending that OSD should invest in development testing, production use of these standards and related implementation guides for broader adoption, incorporation into certification criteria. But I think we're also saying these are really important foundational standards that underlie, again, the three chosen areas that we prioritized.
Well,
okay.
They're anticipating this will be normative by late summer.
Good.
I'm not sure if that's true.
Yeah. Well, and normative, I think, in the revised HL7 criteria for fire implies production use across multiple systems.
Yeah.
That at least should
We've had like 18,000 downloads of the software, of our software for it.
Cool. All right. Any other task force members? Ricky's note in chat. Okay. Or improving workflow efficiency and timeliness via fire subscription. Okay. We'll make sure that we get another pass of the language here. I think we agree on the overall intent and, just want to make sure that the language is nuanced.
Well, I think the subscription thing gives it the power it needs. And
gives
it the control it needs for the person.
David and I are true believers in the initial API task force where we called for a parsimonious set of primitives. PubSub hooks and PubSub were two of the primitives we specifically called out as enabling a more advanced set of workflows off of a parsimonious set of primitives. So,
I can see these questionnaires popping up on my screen, seeing patients just like these fake phone calls, I've had 30 calls now about renewing my warranty on a 22-year-old car.
Anyway, let's hope we don't open EHR systems to arbitrary questionnaire downloads. Okay. Because that would be a bad thing.
Well, we may have made the trade-off that the requirements for E&M codes are now much, much, much less odious, but we just replaced it with a new set of requirements.
Exactly.
So the documentation gets nice and terse, but the interruptions go through the roof. What's going to happen.
Let's go to the next section.
Next, there we go.
Common data models, and Les helped us get to, I think, clearer language here. But our foundational requirement is that modeling is good. USCDI is the foundational data set for interoperability, and that we should make sure that we are building a roadmap to expand USCDI in ways that include incorporate research and administrative needs. Clem, I definitely heard your comment yesterday, which I completely agree with. The intent here is not to drive clinical documentation standards from the perspective of research or administrative needs. The intent is to make sure our interoperability set doesn't drive, as I said, arbitrary difference.
I wasn't reading it, but the first bullet is good and perfect, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I'm a little worried about in the research here, so I'm more interacting with researchers at NIH now than I have been before because involved with the standards. They're getting involved with standards. But they want some things that no one's talked about. I mean, a lot of them anyway are pushing for HPO, the Human Phenotype Ontology, at least those dealing with genetics. So they may not always want what we think they want. That's one question or one issue.
HPO, Clem, HPO, Human Phenotype Ontology, is that what you mean?
Yeah, phenotype. Are you familiar?
Yeah, and you talk about an invasive nomenclature. Probably only a half a dozen clinicians in the world that understand that.
Anyway, so again, I think we're all clear that we're not trying, the intent of this recommendation is not to turn the EHR into a research instrument. The intent is to use clinical documentation. The intent is to use clinical documentation associated with care for the patient but make sure that the clinical documentation is maximally useful for research.
I get the principle.
Yeah.
And the other, I mean, right now, of course, the predominant use of clinical code research is 98%, I think, is ICD. There was Melissa Handel published something about that.
Well, let's put a placeholder to discuss the question of ICD versus SNOMED in the problem list. I don't think it belongs
that's in
to
our next
this
section.
Slide, but it,
yeah, that's in our
it
next
will
section.
Come up, and I want to talk about that a little bit when we get there.
That's in our next section. Okay.
Yeah,
so I think we're clear here. And I guess it's the should incorporate research and administrative needs is the problematic clause here, which we will we'll do another wording pass on to make sure that we're clear about what we're asking for.
The other thing is, I would be hesitant to push or to force these. So for two and a half, three years, there was a project at NIH to get a unified model, and of course they ended up with a fifth model, and I thought it was a pile of crap, but I won't name anything more detailed than that. And that's the risk always of trying to get a new thing that combines.
Yep.
And I would think you might want to just let life happen. And SNOMED and ICD had made a deal, but then it broke apart. And what I heard, I won't get into who says what, who said, but I think we'd be better off letting it work out.
So Clem, my request to you is please use the hand raising feature and let's make sure that we go through a process to make sure that we're getting all the no
I
problem. Thanks.
Guys, they think no one else is on the call.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, cool. I'm gonna pause, see if anybody else wants to get their point in. And otherwise, we will go on to the vocabulary section.
Let me, my hand's up now.
Sure. Okay.
I just want to emphasize that I think that any government push on this won't be productive because there's already emerging. And I work with Cornet and I work with UMOP and the only one that's sort of really, I don't want to get too far, but they're really not that far apart. And for Cornet and FHIR, I mean, HL7 and OMOP are already engaged. So I think these things are often best left to the players. And what they really need is money. They need money to make the conversions. That's what they need.
Yeah, I think that's the intent here.
That's why we're pulling this to the attention of ONC, that leads to opportunities for funding and research grants.
Okay.
And the ISA is a device to track work that people should be aware of. If you wondered what existed in terms of research data models, you should be able to go to the ISA and find links to all that work that's going on. And that's why we're putting it here. That's our job, is to make sure that we're calling out worthy interoperability efforts for monitoring, tracking, funding, et cetera.
That's exactly right. And we're not calling for ONC to standardize. We're calling on ONC to convene stakeholders. I mean, the critical role that ONC has is they can pull together CDC, FDA, and NIH and say, hey, if you want to maximize use of real-world evidence out of EHRs, you better get your act together and not ask for three different things.
Well, let me make some careful comments, though, about the FDA they have a lot of, not resistance, but they can't move fast because of the political forces that apply to them. And they still are using a SAS standard from 1994, I think. And so that if they have to agree to something, they might agree with it, behind the scenes. It might make it very slow.
Yep. I'm not going to get into how ONC fights political battles internally. But again, I think what we're recommending is that research data models be listed in the ISA, and that ONC prioritize work with stakeholders to fund the necessary work for harmonization. All right, let's go to terminology. So I think the only thing that came out of here that was at all maybe had some hair on it was the second bullet. But let's go through. So again, we just pulled out all of the terminology related things that we heard. One is, I think we heard from, this has been a persistent issue. I think we heard from the research community. It's very similar to what the ISP heard when we looked at recommendations for lab ordering and resulting, is that we still have too many labs that have not normalized to LOINC. And we're recommending that ONC use its direct level levers to continue to standardize terminology or working related agencies of HHS that have oversight over analyte machines and over clinical labs, and that's FDA and CMS, to make sure that we source originate codes correctly. And Clint, I definitely take your point that you raised yesterday that the analyte machines sometimes don't have all the context that's necessary to translate directly into LOINC. In the past, I think FDA has been somewhat disconnected from the EHR community in terms of lining up standards, and we'll see the same thing in RxNorm, and really just the request is let's make sure that we start to line these things up appropriately and not expect magic to happen. And then the second one, which is the one that has maybe a little more hair on it, but I think it's appropriately worded, is relating to procedural coding. And again, what we're requesting here is open and freely available standards that are either international or clearly cross-mapped to international standards and are optimized for clinical care, research, and administrative data use.
Let me go back to the middle one first.
Request for you to raise your hand, and then I'm going to call for the full task force to raise their hands. All right. Clem, go ahead.
In terms of the middle one, I mean, I support it in general, but you should be aware the orders are much harder than results, and companies change the subsets fairly rapidly. There are these, so how you define the orderable? One company, Mayo, is asking for LOINC codes for their whole order set. They got like 80-90%, but I think you need a little bit of escape valve some on orders. So maybe if they're available, they should use them, but not. It's just tougher, because of the different subsets that they specify in different panels.
Yeah,
be aware.
I thought we were talking mostly about results here.
We're talking here mostly about results. Clem, we did put together, the ISP did put together a transmittal letter, as you remember, because I think you and I collaborated on that, on orders and results specifically. And I think we got to a pretty good level of nuance there. I spent a good chunk of my career, as I know you did as well, looking at orderable normalization. And our experience was that 95%, 99% harmonization was fine because CBCs don't change, chem panels don't change that much. It's really the exotics that change a ton, but most clinical ordering occurs off a pretty standard set.
No, you're right.
Clem, let me ask you a LOINC question. In an ideal world, if you had a fully cooperative national lab, what percentage of their outbound results could be LOINC coded today if they wanted to?
I think they're probably all at close to 98%. The big ones.
The big ones absolutely are. Yeah.
LabCorp, Quest, ARUP, Mayo. I mean, they're very active. They're asking for terms all the time. So yeah. Maybe even higher.
Quest and LabCorp are standardized in Loinc. The big systems are standardized in Loinc. Where you get issues is in community labs and smaller hospital labs that are continuing to use legacy coding.
Local code, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, they got two helps now. They have, even if it's not automated, they have tables now for an awful lot of the lab instruments, what the codes should become to learn codes. They can read them and kind of link them up themselves. And then the second thing, if they only add, most of these small labs get most of their stuff from the big labs. I mean, there are most of the different numbers of tests, not their total volume. And if they just would take those codes, it wouldn't be that hard. So maybe some pressure is needed there. Now, the other part of it is in hospitals, the Loinc codes is pretty much buried. I've had research to complain they can't find the Loinc codes in this Epic system, but I know it's there. But they're all through mapping tables, and they have, you know, same with Cerner. You got thousands of mapping tables. They can't find them. You know, Apple puts it right in with the results. And I think if we push something like that, I think everybody else, they'd self-correct, too, because people could see them if they'd mapped them wrong.
Yeah, right. I think the mapping codes are, you know, an artifact of the fact that all those systems were built before there was such a thing as a Loinc code. So you do mapping and assign them on export over APIs or fire dumps or whatever. But I'd just like to see, I think the spirit of this is that on the inbound side, they should be Loinc encoded as close to 100% as we can. And
well, you know,
there's some...
I'm not going to argue against that.
Yep, that's right. And then the ultimate regulatory agency here is CLIA that is could express its regulatory authority more forcefully in this area and do the country a lot of good. Anyway, second bullet is on procedural coding. And I think the way we, David, looked at this again, you and I were talking about this at the front of the call. I think the way that we worded this is appropriate and rational and is rational and appropriate. Let me just stop there. So I don't think we're saying don't use CPT-4. I think what we're saying is use a procedural coding set that is open and freely available, that's either international or clearly cross-mapped to international standards. Yeah, go ahead, Jay. Sorry, James.
So I'm raising my hand visually since I have that luxury. Here's some alternate language to consider, and we don't do the wordsmithing now, but I'm going to make this just to make the question that we should be thinking about. You could say open and or freely available, because a closed standard can still be made freely available, closed in that it's controlled by an entity, but freely available means that you can use it. And then we could also clarify open and or freely available to U.S. clinicians, and we could add some constraints about the scope of the freely available, like with SNOMED. So we should consider language like that, I think, that without diluting our point.
That's a great point. So open and or freely available to U.S. clinicians. So let's get other folks from the task force on. Clem has his hand raised. Anybody else who wants to get in, please do.
Well, they should go ahead of me if they want to get in.
No, go ahead, Clem. You're the only one with your hand up right now.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of problem with this one. And firstly, procedures in, at least in the U.S. Core, are defined as things, not tests. They're defined as things that have, in fire, the things that have an effect, like an invasion of the patient. They change the patient. Surgeries and stuff. So that's going to completely confound and confuse things. So, for example, currently, or at least the draft version, the OCDI recommends Loinc codes for X-ray reports. Well, is the procedure code going to be different than the report code? You know, so I think we ought to clarify that. And then I think the ideal would be they should be open.
Yeah, Clem, I think that we've got two bullets here. One is on Loinc codes for...
No, I'm talking procedure code. I'm talking about the next one.
Labs and reports, and the second is for procedural coding, and the intent here is truly for E&M codes and procedures.
I thought we were on the third bullet.
Yeah, we're on the third bullet right now. So I'm just
that's what I was referring to.
Yeah, okay. I got you. I'm just confused as to what the LOINC coding for reports is doing.
LOINC is required for radiology reports, and it's required
for the report. But the procedure, MRI with contrast, chest MRI with contrast, the procedure code is
CPT.
Yeah.
It's a billing. I mean, we have a billing code for sure. That's different. But, I mean, that's why it's confusing. FHIR does not include X-ray images as a procedure. They're not in that resource. That's the part.
I think the problem, Clem, is in the real world, the billing codes drive a lot of the knowledge about what happened to the patient, and that's not going to change.
Yeah.
So what we're calling for is that those billing codes need to be open and or freely available.
Okay, let's call them billing codes then. I think it'd be clearer.
So USCDI has a thing called procedures. USCDI and USCDI 2 calls for HCPCS, CPT, SNOMED with optional with optional ICD-10 PCS and dental, the code on dental procedures and nomenclatures. So USCDI is consistent in. I see. By the way, your comment, Clem, on the USCDI relative to the term procedure, but USCDI does have the notion of a procedure, and it calls for terminology. Some of the terminologies that are called for in USCDI don't meet the test and standard that we're proposing here, which is open and or freely available to U.S. For U.S. uses that are either international or clearly cross-mapped to international standards.
Well, I think you're designing that to be a SNOMED code.
That's not what USCDI says. USCDI allows for SNOMED. USCDI allows for HCPCS, CPT, and SNOMED. And CMS, which is where ONC is directly and through coordination with CMS, harmonizing procedural coding standards, for both administrative and clinical use. Maybe we should, yes, that's what it says, optimized for clinical care, research, and administrative data use. The code systems that are used there don't meet the test.
Yeah.
But you said
whichever one of those. We're not weighing in on which code to use to codify a procedure. We're just saying they should be open and freely available.
Do you disagree with that recommendation?
I disagree with the full spec that it must be open and or freely available to U.S. people and international, all those combinations.
The clarification, this is David's clarification, is that freely available to U.S. nationals or freely available within the U.S. Second clause is that those standards are either international or clearly cross-mapped to international standards.
Okay, well, I would suggest that either the international doesn't count or they should be freely available everywhere. They'd really be open.
Well, yeah, I think we're agreeing, and maybe we're not. So I'm having a hard time thinking through the objection that you're coming up with.
Well,
right now, CPT is a U.S. local administrative code, although apparently there is some CPT use outside the U.S. And CPT doesn't meet the test that we're proposing. There are a couple of paths where CPT could meet the test that we're proposing. One would be that the AMA licenses through NLM CPT for U.S. use, and that CPT is clearly cross-mapped to SNOMED. And that would be a perfectly acceptable way to meet the proposed test. So let me just pause there and Clem, to see if that makes sense to you.
Well, I think your criteria are too limited. I mean, I think what we should try to get to is open vocabulary standards. Period.
Yeah, that's what this. If this doesn't say this, then let's work on wordsmithing, because I think we agree that the code sets and standards that are used should be open vocabulary standards.
Yeah, but when you get to the international, it gets very complicated. France doesn't use SNOMED, for example. and it's not likely to be very soon. China doesn't use SNOMED.
Yeah. And so Clem, the point here is that SNOMED is an international standard, not that.
Well,
yeah.
Well, yeah, but so is CPT in the sense they have some other countries, and so does LOIC has lots of countries. So I just think it's a confounded one when they don't get it free. And we put international. I think we either should just say open and leave the international stuff out of it, because I think that biases it. Open is an important.
It's mapped to international. Clem, it's mapped to international. It's not saying that it is an international standard. It's saying, which we heard from our research testimonials, that the there was a big limit in the COVID research because of the mapping to procedures.
That's right.
Used internationally. So
Sasha has her
calling
Sasha
for
has
mapping.
Her, yeah, Sasha has her hand up.
Hey, this is Sasha. First to clarify, I think I'm philosophically in agreement, but I had two maybe questions. One was whether it makes sense to narrow this specifically to procedures, or I guess questioning why it's a recommendation about procedural coding only. Is that just because that's the only current example? It would think philosophically we'd want to make this recommendation about any USCDI code set.
I agree.
The
other question that I guess I had was just maybe a mindfulness. While I think I agree this would be an ideal state, the sort of short-term consequences of removing a code set from USCDI could be, you know, significant. And so I would hate to see them implement this by saying, okay, we'll take CPT out of USCDI, for example, for procedures. And I feel like that would have a significant negative impact on current interoperability.
Yep. Be mindful about the transition. Be mindful about any vocabulary transitions is a good point, Sasha. The way I would think about this would be one of two outcomes. Among the outcomes, let me just put it this way. Among the outcomes that could resolve this would be A, for the AMA to negotiate with NLM in the same way that ITSIDU has negotiated with NLM on broad usage rights for U.S. uses for CPT, and to engage with NLM to cross-map CPT to SNOMED, so that we have a single vocabulary standard. That would be a perfectly appropriate way to address the philosophical notion that I think I agree with you that should be a broad philosophical notion. And then the second, or we could transition to SNOMED as our procedure coding for both clinical and administrative use. And Sasha, to your point, that would not be an inconsequential transition and would require a long, slow, and coordinated rollout.
So another comment on the CPT. Physicians have memorized those codes, and they know them all. And I think you'll have an uprising or a very painful experience.
I mean, realistically, the chance of changing CPT is zero.
Yeah.
The question is, can it be made free to use to U.S. clinicians, which is very realistic and attainable policy that is disruptive to few.
Yeah. Well, NLM is, I believe, I can't swear to it, I think they've got a budget situation which would not let them repeat the last one they did with SNOMED.
Yeah,
right.
We're not solving budget problems. We're just saying what makes sense. As a recommendation, bureaucrats have to figure out how to address.
Why don't you just a government agency? might do that.
Okay.
DMS,
anyway, let's go on to the
control of this decision.
Okay.
So.
Let's go on to the next slide. Unless there's other comments on this one. Okie doke. As we think about transitioning to ICD-11, ONC should work with CMS and NLM to ensure that SNOMED CT and ICD-11 harmonization will allow single source use to capture clinical data for clinical care research and administrative workflows. Again, just making sure that we We appropriately cross-map our administrative and our clinical coding systems.
Well, what would, I hate to bring this up, but if ICD is used for morbidity, or, you know, we had at our committee, were you guys listening on the last, the committee we were talking about adding CPT to problems? Did you hear some of the comments?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, that the truth is physicians don't use SNOMED. They use, and they map it. I mean, in, you know, it's object, the object system maps it to SNOMED. So it's not deeply embedded in U.S. systems except for three, as far as I can tell, Nebraska, VA, and Kaiser.
Yeah, so, right, this is the typical experience is that everyone documents to administrative standards, and clinical uses are an afterthought, which is exactly what the research community was noting. It was that problem was most particular for procedural coding, and secondarily problematic for problem coding. But the intent here is, let's just assume that clinicians are going to document an ICD-11 when ICD-11 comes down. Let's just also make sure that we have consistent nomenclature so that we can do the cross-maps.
Question is going to be, will SNOMED be needed for clinical findings and problems when ICD-11 comes? Because it'll be flexible. And then, I mean, I don't think we should prejudge what the market's going to do.
I don't think we're prejudging in this recommendation at all.
Well, you're using SNOMED as a specified requirement.
Where am I saying this in this recommendation? Where are we saying this in this recommendation?
You sure that SNOMED, CT, and ICD-11 harmonization will happen?
Yep. That's right. Is that a bad thing? Are you disagreeing? So, Connor, are you disagreeing with the notion that ICD-11 and SNOMED should be harmonized?
Well, that's not my job. I think, no.
Yes, it is. It is your job. On this task force, it is your job.
Okay. No, it'd be nice if it was harmonized, but I wouldn't make it a prerequisite.
Where in these recommendations is anybody saying that's a prerequisite?
Should work with NLM to ensure, the word ensure.
That ensure that SNOMED, CT, and ICD-11 harmonization.
Yeah, it might turn out that if you let them, if they were threatened, they would do. They were supposed to be doing that.
Yeah,
they were supposed to be joined together.
Exactly. All right, let's keep moving. Let's keep moving. So last one is NDC and RX norm. This is a case where FDA regulates use of NDC codes. NLM RX norm is our. General standard for medications. And one of the consequences, and this may be better because the cross maps may be better, but one of the consequences is that administrative codes use NDC. So if I send an e-prescription over to a pharmacy, I send over a representative, often send over a representative NDC rather than RX norm code. And so there's lossy translation backwards and forward. I think we're recommending that FDA and CMS and ONC continue to harmonize NDC to RX norm and harmonizing clinical and electronic prescribing standards.
Well, I've got two. I'm sorry, I always got some pluses. But one of the pluses is NDC is not probably harmonizable for RX norm completely, because it's unruly. There's no central list of all NDC codes. The closest it comes, some of the knowledge vendors have something that comes close. That's one problem. But it would be nice if you didn't have to do both.
I agree.
FDA actually requires the World Health Organization drug codes for researchers. I don't know if you're aware of that.
For research use, but in practice, NDC is the terminology that's used for.
Well, from the point of view of the research use,
script transactions.
That and not RX norm, they're not allowed to use RX norm in their clinical trials. So it would be nice to get a pitch for RX norm.
Yeah, so I think what we're saying here, again, if we read the text, that ONC should work with FDA and CMS to continue to harmonize NDC to RX norm, treating RX norm as a source terminology set, and to harmonize administrative and electronic prescribing standards to use RX norm as a single set, single source for clinical data, for clinical care, research, and administrative workflows. And I think you and I are agreeing on that statement.
Yeah. So what you're really saying, I don't know if you want to say it out loud, is they should allow it in their clinical trials, which they haven't.
Yeah, I think we're generally staying out of, except for the research uses, and the research uses that we're trying to stay of is not FDA-regulated clinical trials, but pragmatic clinical trials. I think we're saying here is focusing on removing NDC and normalizing to RX norm.
Okay, well, if they can do it, I'd be glad to see it happen.
Good, perfect.
I think we need one more bullet. I'd like to propose one more bullet,
okay,
though. And this is another area where is to encourage the use of UCOM, because if you're going to get numeric data and you want to do analyses and everybody's using raw strings to do their units of measure, it's not going to work. It doesn't work. You know, we found 66 different things for red blood cell counts. They're naming the.
I think we did hear from our researchers about UCOM. A positive request for that. I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I thought it was already required.
It was back in the standards committee days.
It's required by all the standards. You know, not ICD, but LOIC, HL7,
yep.
DICOM.
Yep.
But it isn't, and I think that it's going to be, I think from those previous meetings, I think we're going to get into USCDI. But I think it should be highlighted, because I'm now looking at 4 billion tests and dBGAP, trying to make sense out of them, or measurements of various kinds. And the only handle I got on them that's halfway decent is the units. I got to convert them all.
Hold on. I'm gonna call a pause to this. I think we got to get through the rest of this and get to our homework. So we got to move more expeditiously through the recommendations here. So apologize for short-circuiting the conversation, but we have a half an hour left, of which we need to reserve 5 minutes for public comment. So let's go into the next slide. And again, this should all be reviewed, because these are basically the same things we talked about last week and also sent out Monday and reviewed on Tuesday and also reviewed on the HITAC meeting. So for health equity, we endorse use of gravity. We believe that existing USCDI terminology is appropriate. We recommend that associated interoperability standards and EHR certification requirements are prioritized to capture and exchange this data for multiple purposes. And then we encourage the further standardization of address information to allow better geolocating. We heard yesterday in the public health testimony that occupation and occupation coding was a useful thing. I think this probably should be a future item, as opposed to something we make recommendations on here. I'm going to pause quickly to see if there's any quick comments on this slide.
This is Les. I agree with the occupation coding being, you know, needing more development.
Yep.
There are great coding systems. They're just too detailed to be relevant to clinicians. And then,
yep.
There isn't a good conceptualizing what people do, you know, that's risky, like, you know, running a chainsaw through a cow. You know, there's not a good description for that.
Yep. Sasha has her hand up.
Just a minor wording. I think philosophically I agree, but I want to be cautious that we don't set an expectation that EHR certification implies anything about data capture. So I'm nervous about saying it prioritizes data capture.
Got it.
And the certification has the capability, but there'd have to be other mechanisms that would actually enforce capture.
Fair point. So EHR certification requirements prioritize the exchange of this data for multiple purposes. Fair point. Thank you.
Representation and exchange?
Yeah.
That works.
So
The other interesting comment, I think we're going to defer on the occupation thing, but the suggestion somebody made during the meeting that it's better to think of it as usual work.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me that at least in this epidemic year, pandemic year, it's the zip code where you usually work that's more interesting than what you do. But anyway, that's a debate about
the particular
race
issue,
ethnicities.
The particular issue where this came up was, for example, a meatpacking plant or poultry packing plant where there were large numbers of co-located.
Right, but it's the co-location.
Yeah.
It's going to be more useful.
than the actual
that's not being captured.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's
work on an assembly line. Well, where? That's what matters.
So I think we've agreed. I think we've agreed this is future work and not current recommendations. Clem, you got your hand up.
Well, but there are good codes. I agree. I mean, I think we should defer because all the complexities. But I will also caution that all the occupation stuff was baloney in the sense of death. There was no. I mean, the death rates were so dominated by age and race. The rest of it was just noise. And there was people wanting to get taxi drivers. They had the same death rate as the average person compared to the blacks over 80 or whites, even whites over 85, you know what I mean?
Okay. Thank you. Let's go on to the next slide. So this is one that thank you, Les, for helping us work through the language here, two slides on this. We kind of put a preamble in place for why we're making these recommendations. Our findings are that most systems use multiple research models and often perform lossy translation. We found that lack of source normalization, administrative standards divergence creates burden for EHR data used for research. We're recommending that ONC catalog common research models and work with stakeholders to evaluate, develop, and harmonize, map to the US CDI and cross map to FHIR. Pause quickly there.
Respond to that one.
Go ahead.
These three were, there's a thing developed called Bridge, which was a result of a 3 or 4 year investment from NIH in, or maybe it was even Bacor. Trying to make a model. And
NCI.
It's what always happens. You get three things together, you make a fourth one, and you make four, you make a fifth one. I think this is what's really now moving. The core and OMOC, it's just a matter of finding funding so they could bring their users over. They're different. They're not that hugely different.
Yep.
EDIS is the odd man out.
Yeah, no. So okay. If you have alternative wording, I agree with the exact sentiment, which is, look, at the end of the day, OMOP and in the real world, OMOP and Cornet should figure out how to harmonize and get to a single common and, work on get funded to do the work. So if you've got an alternative way of wording this,
you could say that we should find support so that, they want the name standards, some support so that the standards are willing to change and to become more unified could bring their users over. That, I think, is the main problem.
Good. Okay.
Be wrong.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you. Any other comments here?
So you understand this is about money, not about the quality of the coding, right?
Yes.
You got to separate. The model is not coding. The fact that they do care about coding is very important, too, because certainly PCORnet and OMOP do.
Yeah, I think Clem's point, which is well taken, is that we don't want to create one meta model that meta models the existing model, and then now you've got five models. I think Clem's point is, hey, for the people who are actually willing to do the translation work, let's fund them to harmonize and translate to a single model, but not set the expectation that what we're asking for is a meta model and then a meta meta model and then a meta 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 model.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I suggested this notion of a staging model where it's just upstream of these downstream models,
yep,
but well mapped so that it's easy to know what you got in that staging model. It's an intermediate, but I got downvoted on that, so I'll just register that I think there is other language we could consider still.
Cool. We will get to, because I think we all agree we will get to harmonized language. I've got two Doug Fridsma quotes. One is standards like toothbrushes. Everybody wants one, but nobody wants yours. And the second is anything you can do, I can do meta.
Those are, I'll have to remember those.
Yeah. Let's go to the next slide. All right. So this one is relative to standards for representation of implementation of pragmatic research studies within EHRs. Priority areas include consent, and we cross-reference FHIR recommendations, prospective randomization, enrollment, and de-enrollment, separation of research and clinical data, terminology for pre-approval stuff, and other EHR gaps relative to research. And then we recommend that ONC should work with the federal actors who are sometimes creating needless divergence to harmonize to the common research model. And again, we can wordsmith that. Clem, I see you got your hand up. We'll get to you when I sort of summarize the rest of this, and then
sure.
You know, we cross-reference our terminology standards. Okay, go ahead, Clem.
So you know, the main thing I had here is that Medicare now can do pragmatic trials. So, and they've got all this data. What they allow in their big rich database, they allow researchers who come with consented patients or consented people to send data up into the thing and analyze it all together. So I think I'd at least mention them. It's a pretty impressive database now because they have connected to vital status and they got all the drugs. So now you got a treatment and you got outcomes.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
So it's not really finely granular.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll cross-reference CMS as well.
Yeah. Oh, and one other one, you know, with the many billions of dollars that public health is getting, I don't know what it is. It's some huge amount that I think if there any way that we could avoid a brand new divergence, because, you know, with the amount of a resource they have, I think it's all cast. The money is all cast or specified already. But if there'd be some way, because there'd be a temptation for the deep pockets to,
That's the intent of bullet two on this slide, is that ONC should work with FDA. We'll include CMS, CDC. We probably should include INH as well. Et cetera, to make sure that we get to a common research data model. And harmonize is probably the wrong word. We want to get to a common research data model. Sometimes people harmonize with meta models, which is not all that useful. Okay, Sasha.
Could we call these EHR opportunities rather than gaps?
That is a good point. Thank you. Where does it say? Oh, EHR opportunities relative to research. Thank you.
Well, okay. Is the sense that these would not become expected capabilities of EHRs?
I think Sasha is just trying to make sure that EHRs were created for clinical care and not created as research instruments. So let's not call it a gap when it was never intended to be a research instrument.
That makes sense, but are we, not that it's our remit to make a decision like this, but would we envision that these capabilities would develop and become certifiable at some point?
We're not saying that.
Long-term trajectory?
We're not saying this right now, so a number of recommendations mentioned certification. I would at this point, I would be inclined to be silent on it unless there's strong feeling from the task force that we should be non-silent on it.
Well, it's not our, we are certifiable perhaps, but it's not our remit to recommend things to be
certifiable. You're certainly certifiable. That is a true statement. All right. We have not much time to go over the draft transmittal and the homework. So I think we only have a couple more slides to go. Let's try to keep it fast. Go to the next slide. This is the clinical administrative burden reduction, two recommendations. One is to add sections to the ISA to track relevant interoperability priorities and track items for the associated standards and implementation guides. The second is harmonizing the implied administrative data model to USCDI to ensure, and again, I think we got the right vector here, to ensure that EHR clinical data capture is maximally available to address administrative needs at low patient and clinician burden. And we probably should borrow this language for the research stuff, the research points. Our intent here is the clinical use case, the clinical care of the patient, the data captured as a consequence of that should be maximally available for clinical care, research, and administrative needs. All right, comments here. Seeing no comments, let's go on to the next slide. And then situational awareness, we're recommending that ONC should list situational awareness priorities in the ISA and should list SANR as well as related standards, and should work with stakeholders on pilots and early implementation, evaluate and mature standards, yada, yada. And then I think we heard pretty clearly from the SANR team that part of the issue here is not standards as much as it is incentives and systems and policy alignment. I think we heard yesterday a good deal of stovepiped procurement, stovepiped funding opportunities that are also sort of impeding some of the progress here. And so I think all we're recommending here is that ONC should work with HHS to clean some of this stuff up. Easier said than done, but important and needed work. Any comments here? Okay. Clem?
Just a question. I don't know what SANR stands for.
Situational awareness, something, something, response, emergency response. Situational awareness, something, emergency response. I forgot what the N stands
there's
for.
There's a...
It's a firework group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a slide deck from them in one of our early meetings. If you kept those around, goes deep into what they do.
Okay, thank you.
And they're on the web.
Yep. All right. So we put together novel. Thank you.
Novel.
Thank you. You had to have an N in just to make the acronym work. So Wanda put together a draft transmittal letter, maybe if the Excel team could, if you got it, put the draft transmittal up in the presentation. And if you don't
I'm
have
not
it,
sure they're gonna have it.
If you don't have it, then no big.
We could run the risk of the share screen thing and I could put it up, but why don't
we don't have it.
What's in our slide, so let's not
do it.
Okay. We can circulate it.
I can send it to Asel and they can display it if you'd like.
That's okay. Let's not make this complicated because we don't have that much time. Thank you, and apologies for causing confusion. So we put together, and by we I mean Wanda, and thank you, Wanda, who's not here, put together a draft transmittal letter that follows the ONC format for transmittal letters. It's got the workgroup charge. We've got some work to do in terms of summarizing the hearings that we heard, and then we basically poured these recommendations into that transmittal. So we've got some work to do with respect to the transmittal. In particular, we need to beef up the section on the hearings that we conducted and the, you know, who we heard from. And then we need to turn the draft recommendations into finalized recommendations. I've got a format that I like to follow, which is, you know, task force found X, Y, and Z. Task force recommends that ONC, and then, you know, what are we recommending that ONC does? I think the recommendations we already wrote are pretty close, and so they just need a wording pass. But I'd like to get volunteers from the task force to help us work on each of the sections. So just as a reminder, we've got foundational needs, foundational fire standards, foundational model, and foundational vocabulary standards. And then we've got sections on each of social determinants of health, research use, administrative burden reduction, and situational awareness. And so a way that we could do this is assign or get volunteers from the task force to help us summarize the hearings and then get to draft recommendations text that we can wordsmith that we can propose to wordsmith in the full task force for each of those sections. So what I'd like for homework, unless other folks have a better idea, is we will assign those sections out. We'll send out the draft transmittal. We will assign those sections. So we will describe those sections and then ask for volunteers who can help us draft the recommendations and assign out those sections to the folks who volunteered for those sections and collect the input back for consideration by the full task force. Let me pause there and see if that overall flow makes sense to the task force members.
What's the time frames?
Clem, if we go, we presented the time frame earlier back, but we have this meeting and then we have three other meetings, and our final recommendations are for the June 9th full high tech.
Okay, I'd volunteer for some of it.
Cool. We'll send out the sections, and you can sign up for those sections, and we'll parcel that out.
And
thank you for your
research. Do you have materials from the research discussion? I didn't get to that.
Sure. We had three presentations.
Yeah, we have extensive slides from
extensive
that.
Slides, Clem, for that section. And again, it should be in your email box.
Okay.
Because we actually did a good job for that section of getting all the slides in advance and out to the task force members.
Do you remember when it was, what the date was?
About our third-ish or fourth meeting. I can send you the slides, although it's a big chunk.
That's all right. We got.
It was the meeting on the 15th. No, not 15th. The
no, that was 16th? The high tech meeting.
The 16th.
Well, Dave, if you could ship them to me, it just bits in a pipe, and I'll definitely be able to look at it easiest. Find it.
Yeah, it was the meeting on the 16th.
Yeah, I.
Anyway.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I got them. I can.
And then the calendar. Yeah, so Catherine gives me points here. It was the 16th, and she links in the presenter chat the actual task force meeting, and all the materials, Clem, are available in the calendar. So if you go to the calendar for the 16th, you'll see all of the presentation material there. Thanks, Catherine. I think we're good. I think, Clem, if you could, sorry, I'm speaking to the presenter chat. But if you could drop that link in the public chat so that everybody has access to it. But it is, if you go to the HITAC task force calendar for that day, you will see all of the presentations there that you can download and look at your leisure. And it was a pretty extensive, it was a very impressive presentation. And then I think it was recorded. So the recording is also available for that meeting. So if you want to go back and refresh everything, it's all right there.
And cool. Bring a cup of coffee because it was dense.
It was dense and awesome. It was fantastic. Okay, we're coming at 5 minutes before the end. Anybody else in the task force who thinks we should do something completely different in terms of homework and assignments? Going once, going twice. All right, Mike, if we can open it up for public comment.
We sure can. Operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. If you would like to remove your comment from the queue, please press *2. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for comments.
Okay, thank you. And while we're waiting, I just wanted to remind everybody that our call next week, we'll go back to our normal day, Thursday, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Do we have any comments?
There's a public comment in the chat, which is from John Travis on the U.S. CDI and refactoring the U.S. CDI so that it's not a monolith. My comment back to John is that probably should be a cross recommendation to the U.S. CDI task force. I'm happy to drop a note to the task force chairs for U.S. CDI, but that also might be a good recommendation to bring directly to them, John. Mike, I don't think we've got any other public comment coming in through the voice chat or voice line.
There are no further comments.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, so again, just to summarize, we've got 3 more meetings to get to final recommendations. We're going to be working off the recommendations transmittal letter as our primary document. David and I will send out an email today posting or looking at the sections that we intend to work heavily on and looking for volunteers for each of those sections. And then we'll come back for subsequent meetings to pour the updated recommendations in and get to final agreement on the recommendation text. And with 3 minutes left, any other comments from the task force members? All right. Well, David's hope that we were going to end early today was predictably misplaced. We will give people 3 or maybe 2, depending on when we end this up, extra minutes. Thanks, everybody, for your feedback and input. And I think we're in really good shape for the final recommendations on the 9th. So we have a lot of good, hard, and exciting work left to go. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.